please call our third case, Marshall?
Calling case A18-1902, Al Dressley et al. Respondents. Cal Properties, LLC et al. Appellants.
Thank you. Good morning. Are you ready, Mr. Westrick?
I am. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Please begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Westrick. I represent the appellant Cal Properties, LLC. This is not quite as complex as a couple of the cases you've had before you, Your Honors. Our view is...
I'm not so sure they were that
complex. They might have involved bad practices, but I'm not so sure they were complex.
It would break my soul. I want to focus on loan two here just for a minute, the written agreement.
Yes, please do.
I, Scott Ferrazzo, borrowed $18,900 from Al Dressley for 90 days interest, $1,150 to be paid monthly, $350, and the balance will be within 90 days from 6-9-2006, first payment 7-9-2016, total to be paid by 10-9-2016. My client's name doesn't appear anywhere within that document. To say that this document, under the Four Corners Rule, somehow means that my client, Cal Properties, is responsible for the loan, I would say is a mistake and it's an error of law. And it doesn't matter whether or not Mr. Ferrazzo had apparent authority to borrow from someone on behalf of Cal Properties. It doesn't matter because Cal Properties isn't named therein. And you don't get to change a contract to say, I, X, borrowed money from Y. Oh, and by the way, I really meant I borrowed it from Z as well. I just don't believe that one gets to do that, even under the doctrine of apparent authority.
So what about, the district court, with respect to its analysis of loan two, relies on Rosenberg versus Heritage Renovations, which basically says the principal's name is not in the interest. But that's not sufficient evidence to rebut the inference.
Well, Rosenberg says that, mm-hmm. but Rosenberg itself is also somewhat in violation of the Four Corners document. I mean, in Rosenberg...
It is precedent, though, would you say?
Unfortunately, it is. I mean, I as I said, and I've said all along on this, that the real problem happened is I believe, when my client, unrepresented, paid off the first loan, no good deed goes unpunished, and she brought this on herself. I understand that Rosenberg says the name of the principal isn't necessarily in there, but there needs to be something. You take, for instance, in the first loan agreement, which is not part of this but formed the basis for the foundation of the court. There's a mention of Cal Properties in there. There's a mention of Invergrove Auto. There's a mention that it's going to be secured by Invergrove Auto in the first thing. There's something that says it goes on. The third, of course, loan agreement is even worse because there is no loan agreement, and we had an agreement and we thought he could do this. I will acknowledge to the court that what should have happened after the first loan agreement is my client should have sent a letter that said, you may not borrow from Mr. Ferrazzo at all. And I have to acknowledge that because that's the way that it is. She didn't do that. Again, this is not...
Not only didn't she do that, but then she sits by while he presents her as the bookkeeper without, making any mention of the fact that she's the owner.
I understand where she's coming from. Your
client's a shy person, is she?
My client is exceptionally unsophisticated. I think that because of this, she has become much more sophisticated. No one fears the flame quite like the fool who's badly burned, as they say. And I do this. Your Honor, our view on this is you're either going to agree with the notion on loan two that the Four Corners precludes this. And I've acknowledged this below. I've acknowledged it in the paperwork. Likewise, with number three, there's absolutely nothing in the agreement because the plaintiff here, the respondent, his testimony below was, I just presumed or assumed that he had the authority to do this. This really supposed to be based on the statements or the of the principal, not simply of the borrower, the third party saying they're relying on this. And I don't think it's there. I can't argue the facts very much because unfortunately when I'm in front of you, we have a clearly erroneous standard and a clearly erroneous standard's pretty tough to overcome here. I really have to focus on the legal issues.
You also have the problem with the credibility determinations that the district court made.
Of course, but that goes to the facts. That just makes the factual issue worse. So that's why I'm really not trying to argue facts more than I am that the Four Corners document here does this, and that when Mr. Dressley says, I assumed this to be so, and the court believed Mr. Dressley, well, I do believe that the court believed him, but that doesn't do this. I don't know whether this was what I'll call reverse engineering, because if Mr. Dressley can't recover against my client, he can't recover. I'm not sure how that goes. But needless to say, our view is that with loan two in particular, with my client not being named, nothing indicated this was an agreement for its benefit, that the court erred on that, and that with number three, we have a problem with an oral contract. I will concede that the issue of the statute of frauds was not raised below, but I did nonetheless raise it here because to me, again, it's a sign that something has gone amiss. If the court doesn't have any more questions, again, this is straightforward. I will yield my time to my learned friend.
Thank you, Mr. Westrich.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tony Novak for respondents. I will agree with counsel. This is not that complex of a case. We tried it in one day to Judge Wahi in Dakota County. She heard fairly extensive testimony, but just from the two principals.
I'm sure she found it as incredible as I did. She still made credibility determinations.
She made plenty of credibility determinations. Because of the amount of issue and frankly because of the simplicity, some would say, of the issues, we by consent tried it to the court. She heard testimony, she made credibility determinations, and she issued, frankly, much more extensive findings of fact than either of trial counsel submitted as proposed findings of fact in this case. And from our perspective, that's about as far as you need to go, because there is certainly no evidence of clear error here. There is two competing versions of a story on some points. On many of the points that the judge relied on at the trial court level, there really wasn't any dispute. Particularly that the course of dealings between Mr. Ferrazzo, the agent, and the respondents was one where he was held out as the face of the dealership. The principal of Cal Properties made him the face of the dealership with authority, actual authority, to do whatever it took to run the dealership. And midstream, after she herself helped pay off the first loan, did she secretly remove or strip some of that authority without telling Mr. Dressley? He acted reasonably upon all of the things that had transpired up till then in relying on his apparent authority to enter into and become a part of loans too.
No, Mr. Novak, I first of all appreciate Mr. Restwick's candor. I will say, you know, speaking for myself only, not the panel, you know, the third loan agreement, an oral agreement, you do that at your own risk, and there certainly seems to be ample evidence to uphold that decision based on apparent authority. I do have, speaking for myself only again and not the panel, as to the second loan, I'm at a loss to understand how when a promissory note doesn't mention a party you're seeking to hold it liable to, you can hold it liable to simply because it was signed in someone's office. So by extension, if I borrow money from you, but we sign it in Larson King's office, somehow you can sue Larson King for the money that I lent you. That seems to be, once again, a somewhat dangerous practice to follow in commercial law in the state of Minnesota.
So the circumstances do matter, and Rosenberg is precedent here. The principal does not have to be named in the instrument to be bound by the acts of its agent. It's black letter in Rosenberg. It can be considered in determining whether the principal is bound, but at that point, you're looking at whether or not the person was acting as an agent. And that's when all of that information becomes instructive to the court here and what the determination was that were being made. And if you look, there is an inference that a disclosed or partially disclosed principal is a party to a contract made by its agent. So you start with the idea that it doesn't bar the principal from being bound. And then we get into what the court did in this case, is figure out if this was a contract meant to be one where Mr. Ferrazzo was acting as an agent for a principal. And everything else on the record strongly suggests that he was. Where it was done, the check being made out to Invergrove Auto, the check was not made out to Scott Ferrazzo. The fact that the discussion followed on the heels of loan one, where Mr. Ferrazzo takes money, buys inventory, sells the inventory, and gives Mr. Dressley money back. It's also important to note that while CAL Properties is mentioned in the document that formed the basis of loan one, it's not a party to loan one. So we have loan one also between Mr. Dressley and Mr. Ferrazzo that CAL, by its actions, confirmed it was a party to by helping pay at the end of it. It was for dealership activities. That's where all of the circumstances do come in. Rosenberg says that's not the end of the game if they're not named. Then you start looking at everything else, and that's where we come back to the court's credibility determinations and factual findings. I'm going to take a lesson from Mr. Westrick. Unless the court has further questions, we think this is a pretty straightforward case, and I don't have anything else.
Between this and the last one, I think I should have gone to the banking business. Clearly, you can do lots of things without doing due diligence and still get the money.
Having to go back and look into my old UCC textbooks, which I found are no longer all that applicable, was a fun part of this case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Novak, would you like rebuttal, Mr. Westrick?
Only if there are questions, Your Honor.
Any questions from the
panel?
No,
thank you.
Then none, thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your brevity and your arguments. Thank you. Case is submitted.
Well, respondent is present, Your Honors. I could go look in the hall for Mr. Nikitas.
Thank you so much.